Devotees, all glories to Simo devotees, all glories to Simo devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guranga, Nama Om Vishnu Badaya, Krishna Vasai Buddhale, Sri Mati Bhakti Vedanta, Swami Niti Namani, Namaste Sarasvati, Gaura Vanakasrani Nirvishesha, Shumimari Pasukatari Sitarana, Hare Krishna. So just before starting, I just want to again offer acknowledgments for the wonderful Gaurapranim program celebration we had yesterday, and thank all the devotees who put so much time, effort, and energy into it. And I think, of course, we often don't give enough thanks, acknowledgement to Mother Mukhya. I don't know if she's here, but hopefully she's listening to somewhere on the internet audience, who, you know, so many devotees contribute, but somebody has to pull it all together. And And I know we often kind of take it for granted, you know, we show up at these festivals and everything is going on wonderfully, and it does not just manifest by itself. It always takes a person. We are personless. So anyway, just a wonderful festival, and we'll carry on with Srimad Bhagavatam. We are on Canto 11, Chapter 18. This is text 29. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Kushalo jadavacharet Vadeid unmata. Try again. Vadeid unmata vadvidvan Gocharyam nagamascharet Budho balaka vatkridet Kushalo jadavacharet Vadeid unmata vadvidvan Gocharyam nagamascharet Budho balaka vatkridet Kushalo jadavacharet Vadeid unmata vadvidvan Gocharyam nagamascharet Vaishnavis. Although intelligent, Balakavat, like a child, oblivious to honor and dishonor, Kridate, he should enjoy life, Kushala, although expert, Jadavat, like a stunted person, Acharet, he should act. Vedet, he should speak. Unmatavat, like an insane person. Vidvan, although most learned. Gocharyam, unrestricted behavior. Naigama, although expert in Vedic conjunctions. Charet, he should perform. Translation purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Although most wise, the Paramahamsa should enjoy life like a child, oblivious to honor and dishonor. Although most expert, he should behave like a stunted, incompetent person. Although most learned, he should speak like an insane person. And although a scholar learned in Vedic regulations, he should behave in an unrestricted manner. Purport. A Paramahamsa sannyasi, fearing that his mind may be deviated by the tremendous prestige the people sometimes offer to a perfectly self-realized person, conceals his position as described in this verse. A self-realized person does not try to please the mass of people, nor does he desire social prestige, since the mission of his life is to remain detached from the material world and to always please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although neglecting ordinary rules and regulations, a Paramahamsa does not ever become sinful or immoral, but rather neglects ritualistic aspects of religious customs, such as dressing in a particular way, performing certain ceremonies, or executing specific penances and austerities. The pure devotees of the Lord who have dedicated their lives to propagating the Lord's holy name must very expertly present Krishna consciousness in a way that is pleasing to the mass of people so they will accept it. Those who are preaching should try to make Lord Sri Krishna popular without trying to advance their personal prestige in the name of missionary progress. A Paramahamsa not engaged in distributing Krishna consciousness, however, should have no attachment whatsoever to public opinion. Om Gyanatipananda Shaganjana Salakaya Chaksarun Mitamena Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha Vanchakalpa Turubhischa Kripa Sindhu Vibhicha Patitano Pavanibhyo Vaishnavya Namaha. Hey Krishna. So we've been hearing about Varnashram and the different orders of life and gone through Vanapras, Sannyas, and here now in the Srimad Bhagavatam in this chapter, it's beginning to go beyond the sannyasa order and speaking about the Paramahamsa, or one who is completely beyond and free from the Varnashram system. So a few points here, I think, in this verse and purport. First of all, that those devotees who are on the stage of Paramahamsa are not concerned with prestige or public opinion. That's why I can't see anybody. You're all a blur. May purpose, secondly, that the person on the stage may purposefully act to remain outside the social norms. In other words, sometimes one will act in such a way that deliberately avoids false prestige or adoration or whatever. But the person, even if they're neglecting social customs, the devotee does not act sinfully, never acts in such a way to disturb society or to act immorally. Also, that one who is preaching, who is not necessarily on this sort of avaduta paramahamsa stage, must present Krishna consciousness expertly so that it does not offend people. But that preacher, even if they are successful and if they are gaining some following, never does this to seek personal prestige. And therefore, the last point, there needs to be a balance between remaining pure in one's principles of Krishna consciousness and at the same time, staying within society for the purpose of preaching. So this is kind of a challenge for preachers in this Krishna conscious movement, particularly in the Western world. As yesterday was Gaur Purnima, and thinking of Lord Chaitanya exemplified some of these principles very nicely. I was thinking particularly of his pastimes with Prakashananda Saraswati and the Mayavadi sannyasis in the Adi Lila 7th chapter. Lord Chaitanya gave the example of taking sannyas for a deliberate reason. In other words, sannyas was acting within the rules and regulations, in a sense, of varnashram, accepting the order of sannyas. But described there was no need for him to do this. He was in household life, but, you know, he was perfectly situated. Obviously, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, what to speak of playing the part of a perfect pure devotee. But he realized in his preaching that so many people were coming to Krishna consciousness. He was able to attract everyone. But there was one group of people that it was said that eluded his grasp. And that was the Mayavadi sannyasis. They would not take to devotional service or take to the chanting of the holy name. So one of the reasons given that he took sannyas was for their deliverance. And of course he took sannyas in the Mayavad order, right? The Ekadanda sannyas. Of course, that was generally, at that time, from what I understand historically, most of the sannyasis were Ekadanda in the Mayavad line. The Vaishnavas tended to not take sannyas, and would be sort of Babaji's or whatever they might be, and were less concerned with the formalities of the sannyas ashram. But Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, and he was, of course, from Kesha Bharati Maharaj, who was a pure devotee, but was also in this line of Mayavadi sannyasis from Sankaracharya. So why did he do this? He did this specifically for the deliverance of the Mayavadis, including Prakashananda Saraswati. Yeah, okay. Reading from the Adiya Lila 733, this is Prabhupada's purport. He says, Lord Chaitanya identified himself as Supreme Spirit. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or for that matter, any pure devotee, never identifies with social and spiritual visions of life. For a devotee is always transcendental to these different gradations of society. Nevertheless, Lord Chaitanya decided to accept sannyas on the grounds that when he became a sannyasi, everyone would show him respect, and that way would be favored. In other words, by offering him respect as a sannyasi, they were offering respect to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore, they would gain spiritual advancement through their respect for, appreciation at least, if not worship of Lord Chaitanya. So he did, although there was no need for him to accept sannyas, he did so for the benefit of those who might think him an ordinary human being. The main purpose of his accepting sannyas was to deliver the Mayavadi sannyasis. So, of course, as we know, when he went to, was it Benares? Where he went to see the Mayavadis? Benares. Was it in Benares? Okay. It was in Benares, which was a great place, a holy place, and a place where the Mayavadis tended to congregate or associate together. In other words, there was many, many of these sannyasis, very advanced, very austere sannyasis who were following. They were actually following strictly the rules and regulations of the sannyas order. They weren't pretenders, but they were impersonalists. They did not understand Krishna consciousness or the purpose of Krishna. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu presented himself very humbly. In fact, he went and sat over where the shoes were, you know. And they said, "What are you doing? You're a sannyasi. Come and join us." He said, "Oh, I'm not worthy. I'm from a lower line of sannyasis. You know, I should just sit here and, you know, where people wash their feet." He said, no, come over here. So he presented himself very, very humbly, but at the same time, he exhibited his opulence of beauty, right? He was like 24 years old, he's tall, very tall, beautiful features, beautiful form, and he also showed incredible effulgence. He allowed them to see his effulgence. So they understood. This is not some ordinary young sannyasi that we have to take care of and make sure he doesn't go astray or something. Because at first they were concerned about that. He said, you know, you should be coming and hearing Vedanta. You should be studying with us. You're a young sannyasi and you shouldn't just be off, you know, chanting and dancing with these sentimentalists. But, you know, so that they genuinely wanted to help him. And, of course, they even recognized him as Narayan. They said, "You are as beautiful as Narayan. You are Narayan." Of course, they think they're all Narayan. You know, I'm Narayan, you're Narayan. You know, but they actually were seeing that he was exhibiting the features of Narayan. In other words, he was realized. So they did show him respect in that way, and therefore they gained his mercy. In text 104, Prabhupada says, "Here one can see the effect of the Mayavadi sannyasi's service toward Narayan. because the Mayavadis offered a little respect to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and because they were pious and actually followed the austere rules and regulations of sannyas, they had some understanding of Vedanta philosophy, and by the grace of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they could appreciate that he was none other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was endowed with six opulences. So, obviously, they all became converted to devotees of the Lord. And so Lord Chaitanya, in this way, showed that he would use whatever was necessary for preaching. He was very, very effective, just preaching as a householder in Navadvip. But when he saw that for the general public and for the Mayavadis, taking sannyas was favorable to his preaching mission, then he accepted that. So there are these different stages of sannyas, and this is mentioned in this verse in purport. This is talking about the stage of Paramahamsa. So Srila Prabhupada has explained, and it's explained in the scriptures, that there are four levels of sannyas. And so those levels represent different stages of advancement as one progresses on the path of renunciation. But they also, in a more subtle way, they represent different missions. In other words, certain devotees may be called by the Lord to act in a certain way for their particular mission and to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada explains this in the purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 5.127. Prabhupada says, the Paramahamsa stage is the topmost position in renounced life. In sannyas, the renounced order, there are four stages, Kutichak, Bahudak, Pararajakacharya, and Paramahamsa. According to the Vedic system, when one accepts the renounced order, he stays outside his village in a cottage, and his necessities, especially his food, are supplied from home. This is called Kutichak stage. You see there's a certain attraction for that. When a sannyasi advances further, he no longer accepts anything from home. Instead, he collects his necessities, especially his food, from many places. The system is called Madhukari, which literally means what? Yes. It's at the profession of the bumblebees. So it's referring to the bee who will go from one flower to another, right? All these flowers to get pollen. So in the same way, the sannyasana stage of Madhukari will go from person to person begging. The bumblebees collect honey from many flowers, a little from each, so sannyasi should beg from door to door, but not to accept very much food from any particular house. He should collect a little bit from every house. This is called Bahudak stage. When a sannyasi is still more experienced, he travels all over the world to preach the glories of Lord Vasudeva. He is then known as Pararajakacharya. The sannyasi reaches the Paramahamsa stage when he finishes his preaching work and sits down in one place, strictly for the sake of advancing his spiritual life. An actual Paramahamsa is one who completely controls his senses and engaged in the unalloyed service of the Lord. So we see that great devotees may act as Pararajakacharya, or they may act as Paramahamsa. In fact, in our Premadani prayers, we say Pararajakacharya, Paramahamsa, right? In other words, we offer both of these titles to all the great acharyas, because they can act in either way. They can act as completely renounced Paramahamsas, or they can act in the role of traveling preachers, Pararajakacharya. So sometimes these Paramahamsas almost act in a way as described in this verse today as what we call avadutas, or someone who is completely outside of the social orders. In fact, as it says, may even appear to be an insane person or an incompetent person or whatever. So we have to be careful. You know, you might look at devotees and think, well, this person, you know, is really something wrong with them. But it could be that they're just on this high stage. You know? Or else. At any rate, in the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we have some very good examples, vivid examples of these avadutas, or people who acted on this very, very renounced Paramahamsa stage. This would be a good one for the kids, not here today, but you all are intelligent, learned scholars of the scriptures. So who are some examples from our scriptures of these avadutas? Yeah. Jadbara, one of our best examples. Jadbara, who acted just like a... In fact, the word Jada means like... dumb or whatever, yeah. That was his very name meant that. Somebody who didn't speak, didn't act, just acted like he was like what we call maybe developmentally disabled. He sort of acted in that way. And of course, he later revealed himself his great knowledge of spiritual understanding. Who else? Jed Bart, who else? Yes? Nityananda. Lord Nityananda is sometimes called Avadhuta. What would Lord Nityananda do with that show? What's that?
He was called
Avadhuta Shiromani, the jewel. Ah, okay. What did he? What are some of the things he did that showed this activity? Oh, yes. He was, in fact, a little disturbed, wasn't he? This crazy man you sent me out with. What else did he do? He'd like swim in the river with crocodiles, whatever. Just fall down on their feet, you know, like no social custom. Yes?
He was dressed by the four directions.
He was dressed? Okay. So nice. He would. You mean he was unclothed? Okay. Yes.
No.
Oh.
Like 20 necklaces, 10 dollars, everything.
So he could dress in a renounced way, or he could dress in nothing, or he could dress very opulently, right, with all this jewelry.
And then he went on the street, right. And he made a big sankirtan, made the Muslim as a devotee.
Okay.
And the Brahmana got completely, I don't know if it's better, pissed off.
Okay. They were angry. Okay. All right. Any other examples? Remember the Python Man?
Yeah.
Wasn't it Lord Rishabhadeva when he became completely renounced at the end of his life? He became Avadhuta. I remember when that fifth canto first came out way, way, way back. You know, we used to always eagerly wait each new canto. And I remember reading about the Python Man. They said that he'd just lay anywhere and take whatever food. And we all thought, well, the way to do that would really be to just sort of lay down in front of the Maha Prasadam table, you know, and see what drops your way. At any rate, obviously, Lord Rishabhadeva, empowered incarnation of the Lord, preached wonderful philosophy of Krishna consciousness. But at the end of his life, he assumed this position. Now, sometimes there's also people who are not that extreme, but sort of play this role of, not play this role, they are Paramahamsas, and they sometimes we describe them as Babaji's, one who does not, you know, is not very active, but just basically very, very renounced order. And even more recently, what are some examples of these people? Gorky Short is Babaji and Jagannath is Babaji, right? Bamsi Das Babaji. So, yes, we have many recent examples within the last century of Vaishnavs who also play this sort of role of being very renounced. In fact, the Gorky Short is Babaji, when he would go and stay where the people passed stolen urine, right, at the latrine or whatever they called it. You know, in other words, just so people wouldn't bother him. And also so people would not give him any respect. Because he was so actually knowledgeable about Krishna consciousness, and he was able to actually preach very strongly and very convincingly that so many people would become his followers, but he'd purposely act in a way that he wouldn't gain this kind of prestige, respect. Now, of course, we have the contrast that between Jagannath Babaji and Gorky Short, kind of like interspersed, we have Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who acted very properly as a grihasta, as a magistrate judge, following so many social rules and regulations. But at the very end of his life, he also assumed this role. He gave up his preaching the last few years, kind of went into samadhi, this Babaji role. And then we have Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj, who accepted Tridanda Sannyasi, where not many Vaishnavas were doing that at that time. They tended to be more Babaji's. But he wanted, you know, to take this role as a preacher, a strong preacher of Krishna consciousness. And, you know, whenever you see pictures or hear descriptions of Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, you always think of him as being very together, right? Very well-dressed, very proper, very appropriate, you know. So, I mean, he was not like Avadhuta at all. He was very learned. He spoke with such eloquence and such learning that just amazed people. And then, of course, we have the example, our own Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada, those of us who remember him, that Prabhupada always was... I shouldn't make a big thing. It's not like this is a main feature, but it's just we just know that Srila Prabhupada was always perfectly dressed, right? He was always impeccable in his activity. He was perfect in his manners, in his speech. He would often like when he'd be out on walks and there'd be a neighbor, he would say good morning to them. You know, he didn't run up and say, "Hari Bol, chant the holy name." You know, he would actually, you know, in a very proper and very mannerful way, following the rules and regulations more or less in society. He did not offend people. So he could be very strong. He could speak heavily. But he generally was acted in a very pleasing way. And many, many people were won over by Srila Prabhupada, by his interactions with him. Sometimes parents would come, very concerned about their children who had joined this strange movement. But then they would become won over by Srila Prabhupada. So Srila Prabhupada knew how to interact socially in such a way to help people to come closer to Krishna consciousness. And this is the expertise of the preacher. So sometimes there might seem to be this conflict between acting properly according to Dharma, religious duties, and then this other idea of pure devotional service, which is beyond varnashram, which is transcendental to the rules and regulations. So which do we follow? Well, we follow both. We understand both principles simultaneously. So we don't neglect ordinary duties. It's just one of the lines in the purport today was one does not act sinfully or immorally. In fact, Srila Prabhupada said we should be adored as honest men. In other words, our activities should be exemplary. We should be acharya. We should act in a way that people appreciate the devotees for their good behavior. And when devotees don't act in that way, it's actually a dishonor to Srila Prabhupada. You know, if we're acting in such a way that is, you know, that the public thinks that we're doing things that are wrong, that's not only our own dishonor, it's a dishonor to our guru. So we have to act properly. And of course, as a devotee, one has to follow the principles of life. Srila Prabhupada often condemned those who took advantage of spiritual position for sense gratification. You know, one of his... Where did I just hear this? Where someone was talking about, maybe it was something I was listening to, where a person had been a devotee of Guru Maharaji or something, or been a disciple of him. Was someone talking about this, or maybe I'm imagining this? Okay, maybe it was something I was listening to on a tape or something. And apparently, Prabhupada was asking him about this Guru Maharaji, and what he was mostly interested in was he following principles? Or was he like consorting with women, or was he actually acting properly? In other words, that was important to Prabhupada. It's important to all Vaishnavas. And we ask him, yeah. And of course, there were many. We don't want to go into names and stuff, but there were, especially during the 60s and 70s. Those of us who were around might remember that there were many, many gurus came to America, and many people trying to spread their own brand of spirituality. And the fact is, many of them were cheaters. Many of them had very bad habits and sinful life. And so this was condemned, all these bogus gurus and yogis and like that. And if one was following something, then Prabhupada would accept that and, you know, at least give them some credit if they had good behavior. Just as we saw with Prakashananda Saraswati and the Mayavadis, at least they were following the rules and regulations. They were studying Vedanta, which gave them some qualification then to become delivered by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So the devotee follows the rules and regulations of society, acts properly. At the same time, we understand that the highest principle is devotional service, not following rules and regulations. In fact, it's described that one follows the rules and regulations, even of sadhana bhakti, while one is on the bodily concept of life. And when one is more advanced, one no longer needs to follow the rules and regulations, does not need to follow sadhana bhakti. So what do they do? What does the advanced devotee do? They still follow the set example. And we saw that Srila Prabhupada was scrupulous and set an example for us of showing us the proper way to, you know, execute the process of bhakti yoga, of hearing and chanting. You know, Prabhupada chanted his 16 rounds every day. You know, doesn't need to. At his stage, it's not required, but, you know, whatever a great man does, everyone follows. In other words, the principle is there to set example. And it's more than just setting example. It's described in the process of sadhana bhakti. Of course, there are two parts, Vaidhi bhakti and Raghunuga bhakti. In the process of Vaidhi bhakti, one follows the rules and regulations because they are given by the spiritual master. One knows we need to do these things to become purified and make spiritual advancement. In the more advanced stage of Raghunuga, one does not give up these practices, but one actually enjoys these practices. One is able to hear and chant more spontaneously. In other words, one wants to chant one's rounds. One wants to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. Not that I have to do it, you know, that I'm forced to or something like that. So spiritual advancement doesn't mean giving up the practices of bhakti yoga, because these practices of hearing and chanting are eternal. They're absolute. They are on the highest platform. When one is on the high, what do the six Goswamis do? When they heard and chanted about Krishna together. So this is the practice of the Paramahamsas. So, of course, the Nectar of Instructions gives us this well-known word of Niyamagraha, which, as Prabhupada explains, it has two meanings. One meaning of Niyamagraha is to neglect the rules and regulations, to not follow. And the other is to follow only for the sake of following and not understanding the purpose behind the rules and regulations, which is to advance in Krishna consciousness and to understand one's relationship with Krishna. So this is important, you know, that we, while following rules and regulations, we also understand that they have a purpose. Someone was talking about in class, I think it was Janmasthami, someone was giving class talking about that, you know, that everything is for the purpose of never, always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. I think you were talking about that later. In other words, everything serves this principal rule, you know, to advance in Krishna consciousness, to remember Krishna, and never to forget Krishna. So, in this process of bhakti yoga, we don't overindulge the senses, and we don't deny the senses. We have this balance. And, of course, that's the idea is that we engage the senses in the service of Krishna, from the principle of yukta vairagya. And as described in the Narada Pancharatra, it says, bhakti or devotional service means engaging all of our senses in the service of the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the master of all the senses. When the spirit soul renders service unto the Supreme, there are two side effects. One is freed from all material designation, and one's senses are purified simply by being employed in the service of the Lord. So that is the principle of Krishna consciousness, engaging all of our senses in the service of the Lord. So the dry, artificial renunciation of the mayavadis or the personalists is not helpful. It's called, what is it, polgu, vairagya? Polgu, right? Which means basically useless. Renunciation that doesn't serve a purpose. Why doesn't it serve a purpose? Because it doesn't bring one closer to Krishna. It's not for the, it does not help one in devotional service, serving the Lord. So real renunciation, yukta vairagya, is employing the senses in the service of the Lord to serve Krishna, and therefore the senses become purified. So there's, of course, we've been talking about varnashram for the last few weeks or days here, and talking about renunciation and the different ashrams and different stages of life. Basically, the point of all of this is to put ourselves in a position of spiritual strength. We want to act in such a way that we can become well-situated in Krishna consciousness, and that our devotional service is encouraged and increased. Very important story and example of this is, of course, in the 8th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the story of Gajendra the elephant. And as you all remember, Gajendra and the crocodile were engaged in a great fight. And when they were on the land, the elephant was very strong, but when they got in the water, the elephant was not as strong, and the crocodile was strong because the crocodile was situated in this element of the water. So, the lesson is given by Srila Prabhupada in the purport to 8.2.30. Prabhupada says, now, from this we may take the lesson that in our fight with Maya, we should not be in a position in which our strength, enthusiasm, and senses will be unable to fight vigorously. Our Krishna conscious movement has actually declared war against the illusory energy, in which all the living entities are rotting in a false understanding of this civilization. The soldiers in this Krishna conscious movement must always possess physical strength, enthusiasm, and sensual power. To keep themselves fit, they must therefore place themselves in a normal condition of life. It's interesting that Prabhupada talking about the normal condition of life. What constitutes a normal condition will not be the same for everyone. And therefore, there are divisions of Varnashram: Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. And then Prabhupada goes on in that purport and explains that, if one is not able to renounce, then one enters the Grihastha order. Basically, and there's no loss, there's no difference in however one is situated, if that helps one in their Krishna consciousness, helps them to advance in this fight against Maya. And it is, we all know, it's a struggle. Prabhupada gives a lot of military analogies here, talking about this war against Maya, and we're all, so it is, it is. And Prabhupada says, you have declared war against Maya when you become a devotee, and Maya is very strong. So we need to take every advantage that we can to become Krishna conscious, not just to fight off Maya, but we fight off Maya by becoming attached to Krishna, by developing our love for Krishna. And that way, but we need to be rightly situated to be in the best position. So one of the other points that was made here is that in the advanced stage, even if one is in this Paramahamsa or Parabrajaka position, one has to remain free from false pride, desire for prestige, and always remembering that humility is the primary quality of a devotee. And this is one of the attributes that we see in these great devotees that we gave examples of. And one of the features of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was this great humility that he exhibited. He didn't come on, I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everybody follow me. No. He won them over by his beauty, but also by his humility. They were charmed by him. And then, of course, they finally began to realize that he was Narayan himself. But the devotee always remains humble. It's not artificial. It may seem like that for sometimes. Sometimes, well, I don't really feel humble, but I have to act humble. But actually, even acting humbly, even if you don't feel humble, is a good thing. Because eventually, you kind of catch on. But you may actually start becoming humble by acting in that way. In other words, sometimes our behavior follows consciousness, but sometimes consciousness follows behavior. In other words, we do things in a certain way, and eventually, the consciousness becomes purified, and we get it. Oh yeah, I really should be. I should be feeling this way. So, humility is not artificial. We're humble because, first of all, we should be unconcerned with any material opulences. Either things we own, or personal possessions, or personal attributes. We know that it's all temporary. And we know we have no real cause for any pride in anything pertaining to this body. Because of our past karma, we have this particular body, we might have some good qualities, we may have some bad qualities, but that's nothing for us to feel personal pride in. And secondly, why should we feel better than anyone else? Everyone is part of Krishna. We see equality in all living entities. If one sees that as having that vision, Bhagavad Gita tells us, the humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision a learned and gentle Brahman, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater. So first, we should also have that vision. Everyone is part of Krishna. There's no reason to have any feeling of superiority. And this is, of course, what the Paramahamsas demonstrate all the time. And finally, and probably most importantly, we see ourselves as insignificant compared to the greatness of Krishna. Krishna has created everything. Krishna owns everything. Everything is part of Krishna. Everything comes from him. Everything is controlled by Krishna. Every blade of grass, every atom, every molecule, every planet, every planetary system, all these universes emanating from him. Hard to get real puffed up when you think that way. Yeah, most of us haven't really created any universes lately or done anything of the magnitude of Krishna. So why would we be anything but humble compared to the greatness of the Lord? So that's very important that we want to, in fact, that's one of the six divisions of surrender, acceptance of those things favorable to Krishna consciousness. The final one is humility. Humility is one of those things that's a groundwork, a framework for Krishna consciousness. And as we heard in the, I hope all of you, I'm diverging from script here a little bit, but I hope some of you, or most of you, saw the wonderful play that the Bhaktivedanta Academy put on the site, and I think the finale was just so wonderful when we had a beautiful rendition of the Shikshastakam verses. You know, what's that? Was that something really special? Almost brought a tear to your eye, right? Well, those of you who have some real emotion, not myself so much, but it was so wonderful. And of course, one of those most beautiful verses is Trinadapi Sanichine Drorati Seishnana Amani Amani Deva Kirtaniya Sadahari. The one who thinks himself lower than the grass, who is more tolerant than a tree, and who does not expect honor, but is always prepared to give all respect to others, and very easily always chant the holy name of the Lord. So that state of humility helps us to understand, accept, and relish the holy name. It helps us to become advanced in Krishna consciousness, to understand our position properly as servants of the Lord. And sort of the side benefit is we become very attractive to others. That humility is the ornament of the devotee. And when people see that, it's amazing. Because very few people are very humble in this world. You know, most people, if they have any opulence, they have any intelligence, they have anything, they become puffed up and proud. So humility is a rare quality, true humility. And that becomes very favorable to people understanding and accepting the devotees. And therefore, coming closer to Krishna consciousness. Okay. Stop at that point. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Comments? Questions? Reflections? Yes, Madhavi. Oh, wait for the mic.
I'd like to tell a story to help us go beyond just looking at the external view when we judge or we see a Vaishnava. I went to India in Kotakal for a treatment in Ayurvedic, and at the same time when I was there, there was this devotee, Dharma Prana from Toronto, who used to be a great distributor of books, and he got a stroke. From day to another, he was paralyzed half his body. He couldn't speak anymore properly, but he would go out. He could hardly say the Hare Krishna mantra, and people were taking to this process, you know. It was so incredible to see him. And from that point, I started thinking, we could never judge, you know, because it's very easy when people sit on the Vyasasam and speak so, you know, intelligently and knowledging, you know. But this devotee was completely transcendental to his external body. Mm-hmm. And from that moment, I started to think, I will never judge someone from the external side. Mm-hmm. And we have many devotees in this community who look like they are crippled or with handicap, you know, externally. But you should see how great devotees they are. It's incredible.
Yes, thank you very much. It's very inspiring and very important to remember. And in fact, we are, in the Nectar Instruction, we're specifically enjoined to never view the devotee in terms of external features and whether one has some issue like that. Anything else? Nirgatmika? Or Madhusukada?
When you were talking about how Srila Prabhupada said about being humble and just act humble, actually he said it about a few different things I was remembering, like even about a devotee saying he didn't feel like paying obeisance to Garga Muni Prabhu. Perhaps just do it and then you'll feel like it.
Mm-hmm.
Or being enthusiastic. I'm not enthusiastic. Yeah. Well, act enthusiastic and you become enthusiastic.
Yes.
So many things are like that. You want to get up in the morning, but you just get up and then you feel you're happy about it. So
yeah.
It's interesting how that works.
It is, and those are interesting examples I probably gave about if you don't feel enthusiastic, act enthusiastic, you don't feel like offering obeisances, offer obeisances anyway. Of course, one thing I think that it can happen, there can be many levels to it, but Krishna sees our attempt, right? We're trying. I may not feel like it, but I'm trying. Krishna and the spiritual masters see that attempt and therefore give us a little special impetus or a little mercy to continue that.
And like Sankirtan was so much like that.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't feel like going, but you went out and then it was like, it's fun.
So. Oh, yeah. I went on Sankirtan for 3 years, or at least three, I don't know how long, but I don't remember one day when I actually absolutely felt like, oh boy, I get to go out. No, I mean, I'm kind of a introverted person, so it's not something that's easy sometimes, but you do it and then it becomes really, really nice and you get so much reciprocation from the Lord. Yeah. And that is a good point that we sometimes when we do things that stretch us a little bit, as they say, get out of your comfort zone or try to attempt things that may be a little bit difficult, take on a challenge, sometimes we get so much reciprocation from Krishna just by the attempt, whether we're successful or not. Right? Yes? Okay, go ahead, Prabhu. Oh, she got the mic here, so whoever has the mic, go ahead.
There's a very simple statement about humility that I've always liked very much. It's very effective. It's that humility doesn't mean thinking less of yourself. It means thinking of yourself less and Krishna more.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Thank you very much. Yeah. I remember one class I gave and I talked about that idea of like self-esteem, and like being selfless does not mean it doesn't mean having low self-esteem. Being humble doesn't mean, well, I think little of myself. As you said, it means that we're thinking more of Krishna, And in one sense, you could say that when the more spiritually advanced one becomes, one actually gains more and more understanding and more realization of one's true self. And the true self, the jiva, is actually glorious. I was just reading, somehow or another, by the mercy of Bhanu Swami, I was talking with him in Mayapur, and I bought a bunch of his books, his translations, and he's translated all the Sandarbhas of Jiva Goswami, and I was reading the Paramatma Sandarbha, and it talks about the jiva extensively and all the qualities of a jiva. It's very, very interesting, because we sometimes don't realize that the jiva is actually glorious. We just haven't fully realized, we haven't realized that yet, Okay. Prabhu, welcome.
Very well. No, just a comment that there was many people. Some devotees were going to the Radha Kunda regarding the Babaji stage. They're going to Radha Kunda, and Prabhupada came to know that one devotee, particular devotee, was in Radha Kunda chanting. So Srila Prabhupada went to the Radha Kunda for parikrama. He went and met this devotee, and he said, "Are you chanting here?" "Yes, Srila Prabhupada. I'm chanting 64 rounds every day." "Yes, I'm chanting." And Srila Prabhupada got upset and said, I. Like saying, no, you follow the spiritual master. Don't just do, independently trying to do something. So the Babaji stage also means that you go under the rules and regulations of your spiritual master. So, Prabhupada say, actually, they go to Radha Kunda to sleep and eat.
Yeah. It's interesting because, Prabhupada never, as we know, there's several stories like that I can think of, but Prabhupada never really encouraged that. Prabhupada, because we're very neophyte. We have so much attachment to our world. Prabhupada knew that we need to be actively engaged. Not that we go off, like you said, sleep and eat and like that. In fact, there was only this one devotee I didn't know of. I don't know if anybody remembers his name. It was Odalami, that Prabhupada actually gave him Babaji initiation because he was, had terminal cancer or something, and he sold him just to chant so many rounds to San Mayapur. And of course, unfortunately, somehow he had some spontaneous remission, and he left Krishna consciousness completely. So, it's like, in other words, it can't be artificial. And for most of us, that kind of renunciation is not natural. It tends to be more artificial. So we need to be fully engaged in this, Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, engaging ourselves fully in spreading Krishna consciousness on behalf of Srila Prabhupada. Yes, Pangavinda.
Mm-hmm. To channel the inclination of the Kali Yuga, those Ekadambi sannyasis, just to attract them. And I was, while you were reading it, I was thinking like a parallel to Prabhupada. Because when Ramanujacharya, one grihastha, he came to see Prabhupada in Hyderabad, and he challenged Prabhupada, not challenge, but a kind of a challenge way that, he said, why are you giving young men sannyasi? Mm-hmm. So then Prabhupada says, when one should take sannyas? He didn't answer, he asked him another question. Then he said, before death. So you have an idea when he will die or he will not? Mm-hmm. So he got defeated. Mm-hmm. Then his friend, is another scholar, grihastha, he was asking Prabhupada, but they will fall down. Prabhupada says, but at least they will stay 10 years in sannyas. Mm. In their 10 years life, the devotional service they will do, you will not be able to do in your entire life. Mm-hmm. Why don't you see the positive? So I was thinking about it. The Prabhupada was channeling the inclination of any devotee, any sort, and he's giving whatever ashram. So we should not ever judge Prabhupada's ever any mistake.
Yeah.
Because his intention was so pure to attract them some or other, to utilize their inclination to suffer.
Yeah, that's interesting. I was in these verses I was reading in the seventh chapter of Adilila, but Prabhupada, in one purport, I remember coming across here, Prabhupada said, we are giving many young men sannyas. He said, even though they may not be qualified. In other words, Prabhupada knew some of them would fall down. He knew that. He knew that they were not necessarily qualified, but he gave them a chance, gave them the opportunity, and he mentioned, it was needed for the spreading the movement. They're starting the Sankirtan movement. And so he gave that opportunity of so much service. And, some lasted and some didn't. Yeah, but as you said, it was Prabhupada fully understood. He made a deliberate choice, made it like a strategic decision, that it was better to do this, knowing that was a mistake, knowing some may or may not make it. Yeah.
I was thinking one quotation was very attracted to me. Prabhupada says the highest realization of Krishna consciousness understanding will be when one is able to give the spiritual truth to others in such a manner that they will respond positively.
Yes. Yes. We want to make Krishna consciousness, we want to present it in such a way that it will be attractive to people and people will want to take to it. Yeah.
So one other reflection on the sannyas order that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta adopted sannyas for, you might say, Gaudiya Vaishnavism, because it had not been practiced since the time of Lord Chaitanya taking sannyas. I don't recall any place in the scriptures where, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where the adoption of Tridandi Sannyas was adopted by Gaudiya Vaishnavism.
Right, I don't think so.
And I haven't perceived any other historical, you might say, precedent for this until the adoption by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur.
Yeah,
maybe you have. Yeah. Tridandi Sannyas is technically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
From that same book where he found that freedom is enough.
Right.
And he, one of the reasons he gave, because all the devotees were paying attention to the Ramakrishna Samas.
Right.
And he wanted to be literally, I heard their attention to us.
So it's a relatively recent phenomenon, you might say, in Gaudiya Vaishnavism.
Mm-hmm.
And Srila Prabhupada took it up very enthusiastically, I would say, making it a part of his ISKCON society, just as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta made it a part and parcel. All the leaders of the Gaudiya Math basically were given sannyas at the time. And he was especially intent because they had many scholars in the Gaudiya Math. There were many from Brahmin families who were very well versed in scripture, and they had a very high standard of scholarship before they would be given sannyas in the Gaudiya Math. And Srila Prabhupada actually, in a way, overrode that kind of standard and just made it whoever was a leader, and Prabhupada felt that he would be able to push on the Krishna consciousness movement. He would give sannyas to
it was a necessity almost at that point.
Yes.
Now, interestingly, because Prabhupada being a Jagat Guru can make these decisions, and of course we don't feel like we are in that position anymore, so we have to be we're much more careful. We can't act as Srila Prabhupada did. And in the last 20 years or so, the whole process of taking sannyas has been, you know, tightened up so much, where a person goes on a waiting list for so many years, you know, 2 to 5 years. They're reviewed by the GBC every single year until they're finally, you know, in other words, they're viewed, they have to do different projects and preaching until they're actually awarded sannyas. And the result is that we have had very few fall downs.
In recent years,
yeah. In fact, somehow, usually over that process, if there's problems, they kind of emerge, and some people get weeded out. It's not; they all become sannyas.
True.
So, I mean, I think that, in other words, yes, Prabhupada could override anything, but we have to be much more careful.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, I think we're okay. Gandhi, can you get the last word?
Okay. What is the meaning of ekadanda sannyas then?
Ekadanda means one. You know, they don't have the three, and it's basically Mayavadi. We're all one.
Then that's what it is.
Yeah, and the tridanda is, you know, what is it, body, mind, and words, the three, you know.
But that doesn't seem to be the opposite of we're all one.
Ekadanda means one. Eka was one.
So that's...
That's the Mayavadi tridanda. Or not tridanda, the Mayavadi danda. Yeah. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.